You're listening to The Kevin O'Connor Show. That's coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a good one today. We're getting into our one-month NBA awards. I know it's really early, but it's time to set a baseline looking at MVP, Sixth Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and all that with what we have so far on our ballot to talk about what's been happening throughout the NBA. We also talked about everything that happened on Thursday night with some of the latest news and some great games. And I do all that with Tom Haberstroh, who joins me as he does every single Friday on The Kevin O'Connor Show. And guess what? Father John Misty dropped a new album with the song that is the theme of this show. I guess time just makes fools of us all. So we'll let Father John Misty bring us in as always. All right, Tom, let's start off with Thursday night's games. We had a great one between the Magic and the Lakers. Magic won the game 119 to 118 off of a Franz Wagner game-winning three-pointer. Finished the game with 37 points and 11 assists. Looked like a top 20 NBA player, a superstar. What were your impressions from Franz Wagner leading the Magic to that victory?
Amazing job by him, and he took advantage of a very tired Anthony Davis down the stretch. Did a blow-by, completely blew by him to get to the rack, and Anthony Davis just kind of choked the game away with missed free throws, and it wasn't his best. He missed the potential game-winning shot there at the end. But Franz Wagner is very much in the leading category or leading conversation for most improved player of the year, and he did it even before that game on Thursday night. I think he's been outstanding this season, you know, capitalizing on a great run with the German national team. And I think Franz Wagner is just, he's an exciting young player who probably doesn't get much national credit because he plays in Orlando and Paolo got hurt. But look at how the Magic have kind of bounced back from that injury, 10-7, which is now fourth in the Eastern Conference. And Franz Wagner doing what he did down the stretch, a big reason why.
You mentioned Franz Wagner is a leading candidate for most improved player. We're going to be sharing our 1 month NBA awards later in the show, and Franz, it will definitely be in discussion there as well. But let's talk about him now. 28.1 points per game over his last eight games, 6.9 assists to only 1.5 turnovers, six rebounds, 2.1 steals. Franz has been a superstar. And recently on one of our episodes, we talked about how his shot fell apart midway through last year. It fell apart in the playoffs. It fell apart for the German national team despite their collective success. But Franz, for some reason, the shot evaded him. He seems to be getting that back. But even the thing with Franz is you see it. He had his 10 assist game. He was playmaking last night. Paolo versus Franz, those guys can star together, they can coexist together, but Franz is secretly the better playmaker and the better defender. To me, he's been an all-defensive team caliber candidate so far this season on that end of the floor with his versatility on ball and off ball. And as a playmaker, the dude just has such great feel for creation. And I thought Jamal Mosley, his head coach, had a really interesting quote after the game. He said, like, Franz, he's kind of had to push him to be a bit more selfish because he's always trying to make the right play as a passer, always trying to make the right decision. But sometimes the right decision is just to take the shot, just to go for it. And we saw that on Thursday night. He misses the first attempt at a deep pull-up three, and he makes the second one. This is a lesson some great passers have to learn with Jokic. I talked about this with Adam Mattes. He'd have games where he shot four times per game. And then he realized, oh, wait a minute. To be selfless, it's to score for my team. And I think that's the lesson we're seeing with Franz Wagner learn right now with Paolo Banchero out. And I look forward to seeing how they coexist together when they're back together. But I believe it can work at a really high level. And I believe Paolo being out, giving Franz this opportunity, is going to be one of the big silver linings for the Magic, not just this year, but in the whole big picture of their team building era. But for these guys could be the stars together in the next contenders.
To succeed in the NBA, you have to turn adversity into opportunity. And that's what they're doing here with Franz Wagner. leading the team without Paolo Banchero. And usually when I see all these numbers going up across his stat line, I'm like, oh, it must be because he got more minutes this year. He's averaging 4 more points per game, 2 more dimes per game, another 3 per game, and his steal rate is way up this year. And I'm like, oh, it's because he's getting more minutes. His playing time's way up. And actually, his minutes are down this year compared to last year. So this is not just volume increasing in his box score stats, but also his creation for his teammates. Like you said, it's not just representative in the numbers in the assist column. In the potential assists, Jared Duman just posted a video breaking down his playmaking where he had a career high 21 potential assists in that game against the Lakers. And I think, you know, we tend to look at creation as a matter of how many assists did you get, how many assist points did you create. But we also have to remember, a lot of times you're passing to Jalen Suggs, you're passing to Anthony Black, or you're passing to Jonathan Isaac and he doesn't finish at the rim. You got to remember the potential assists are just as important as the actual assists. And I think when you look at Franz Wagner, he's huge too, dude. Like, they had a pick and roll where they switched. Anthony Davis was on him, and then he switched away from him. And I'm like, yo, AD, you got to guard that dude. He is about your size, and he's going to get that three off. And sure enough, he gets that three off and wins the game. So AD, I think a lot of that might have been fatigue down the stretch. I don't know. But like, when you look at Franz Wagner, he is a matchup problem across the board.
Yeah, he's huge. He's 6'9". He's wide shoulders. He's big. I saw the Magic in person on Wednesday night against the Clippers. They lost that game 104-93. Did not go well for them. Chris Dunn, Derrick Jones Jr., Amir Coffey, that perimeter collective, and Zubats at the rim. The Clippers' defense is amazing. Yeah, and they did a great job against the Magic that night. And that was my first time at Intuit Dome, Tom. Do you want to know my first impressions of Intuit Dome?
I once you told me you went, I have been sitting on the edge of my seat waiting to hear how your experience was. Tell me, did you use the bathroom?
I did use the bathrooms. Intuit Dome gets 2 thumbs up to me. The Halo screen is super cool. I like all the data they have up there. It's probably too much for most fans, but for a lot of the hardcore NBA fans, I think it's nice to have. There's retractable cup holders behind the seats. They have USB-C charging ports at the seats.
Wait. Retractable cup holders. Yeah, explain this.
Like you know how like certain arenas, the cup holders are always out. These ones you can like put it back in on the seat in front of you. So like it so won't for those be in the who way of your knees or legs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's there if you want it. It's not there. It's there if you don't want it as well.
It's so, the little things that matter, right, KOC?
The little things. And here's one of the little things about the bathrooms. They have a ton of bathrooms. They have a ton of concessions. None of the lines are long because there's so many of them. They're everywhere. And with the bathrooms, I've never heard anybody mention this, but this is a big thing to me. It's very important to me. There's no hand dryers in there, and I am anti-hand dryers in bathrooms because they are so loud. They spread bacteria. They spread germs and viruses. They have the paper towels, or you can just, you know, dry your hands on your legs if you want to, but they don't have the hand dryers, and that is a huge win to me because they are so loud. They're pointless. Get them out of there. They should be banned.
And you know what? They dissuade people from washing their hands. I feel like people see one of those air dryers and they're like, yeah, I'm just not going to wash my hands. It's too much of a pain. If I don't have a paper towel, I'm just going to go and wipe my way out of that bathroom. Also, those like Dyson ones, I apologize if they're a sponsor to the show. The ones
horrible.
You put it into that like suntanning booth and then it bounces back at you, you know,
horrible.
From the previous person. I don't like that at all. So I am totally out on the air dryers, and I'm glad to hear it, and I'm glad you're speaking up on big bathroom. No one wants to say these things, but you are standing in the face of big bathroom, and now we can have actual talk about the air dryers. Thank you.
I'm a courageous man. What can I say?
Yeah, and someone needed to say it.
Yes, exactly. But yes, good on Ballmer. It's very clear his attention to detail throughout the arena. The seats we had, you were able to go into like some lounge. One of my friends brought me, and like the lounge was nice, good food, drinks and all that. You could grab a water or, you know, a soda, whatever. It was all very nice. It was well done. The seats were comfortable. Clippers games, when they played at Crypto, I thought they were too loud, like way too loud. Like, it was just bothersome. As you can tell, I don't like loud things. I don't like loud hand dryers and bathrooms. The arena was too loud. I thought the volume was more appropriate at this game. Now, the wall, it's an effort. I think the team is really, you know, fun to watch this year. 9-7, good on Ty Lue and that coaching staff for getting this defense going, and offense is, yeah, Norm Powell coming along. Like, they're doing enough without Kawhi Leonard on offense. And I hope the team gets good, because, dude, like, credit to Ballmer for trying something innovative with the wall. The fans there, I mean, I would not rule out some paid actors among them, but but I mean, it's LA.
Big Waz dropping some heat. He mentioned that on a pod, just like, yo, I'm not saying that they're paid actors, but kind of a lot of paid actor tendencies over there. I think that's some another of them investigation. Are.
Some of them definitely. I mean, the sleeveless dude banging on the drum in the front, I don't know, seems a little sus.
Hey, maybe, but that's the new market inefficiency, is we got to do like Oscar night. You know how they fill the theater with people sitting in the stands so that it doesn't look like it's an empty theater. I think maybe that's it, is like, in order to drive fan interest and make it more intimidating, maybe we just got to get one of those seat fillers, Kevin, to make the wall unassailable. Like maybe that is the thing. I'm actually for this.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Ballmer, though. I mean, I think the wall is cool. It looks intimidating in person. It TV and photos don't really do it justice when you look at just how it just keeps going up. It's crazy. So, I mean, they're trying something. The Lakers are always going to dominate LA for fans, but they're trying something new, and hopefully the Clippers keep getting better. Hopefully they get Kawhi back at some point this season, because they could, you know, Kawhi staying healthy is the biggest if in basketball. But if he stays healthy, this team could become a threat. On Thursday night, we also saw the Hornets and the Pistons go to overtime. The Hornets won 123-121. These two teams always seem to be involved in these great, exciting games. Brandon Miller, my guy, had 38 points with 8 made three-pointers. LaMelo Ball, 35 points, 9 assists. Hit a three-pointer that caused Hornets announcer Eric Collins to have a heart attack. It's a fun game, man. Like, these Hornets, dude, like, they just keep having exciting games. And the Miller-LaMelo combination seems to be having these games that show you what they could be when they reach their peak someday.
How good is Eric Collins, first of all, before we get into that?
I love him.
It makes watching a game so much more enjoyable, because it's just he gets so excited and screaming, and not all of it is for the Hornets. There's some times where he'll do the same thing with the opponent team. So he just loves hoops, and you can feel it pop off the screen. The game itself was awesome. Awesome. And down the stretch, LaMelo Ball fouls out. Cade leaves the game. And so it was really the Brandon Miller show. And he was outstanding. The guy was spectacular, hitting crazy shots. And he got bailed out a little bit. I don't know if you saw that with the attack there down the stretch with Beasley. He was basically going at the rim and got by Brandon Miller, and then got the putback for the game winner in regulation. And Brandon just kind of missed it. And then he missed the bunny there, and he was bailed out. And he made it count. Like, he was like, I got another life here in the overtime. And he was insane. The pull-up threes, the driving attacks, the size, the confidence. What they have in Charlotte, my buddies here in Charlotte love this young core. They love the way they play. LaMelo Ball has been outstanding this year. I think LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, not just on Thursday night, but all season long, they are worth the price of admission alone. Forget the rest. They're going to get better because they have no center position at this point. They went small for most of that game with Grant Williams. He's not a center, but he's starting at center, and they're basically going down the stretch with five wing guys, and they're still providing really exciting basketball.
Do we know when Mark Williams is going to come back from that foot injury? I don't think there's been any definitive timeline given. Their defense was very good last season with him on the floor.
They said on Thursday that he has returned to the floor in some capacity and progressing. I feel like in injury reports or injury updates, progressing is the new setback. Like progressing is almost like code for like, hey, he's not where we want him to be, but we got to say he's progressing. Because every time I see that word, I'm just like, oh man, that's setback to me. And it's a similar thing with Chris Middleton, where Doc Rivers before the season was like, I think he might be ready for, there's a chance he's ready for opening night. A month later, he is still, quote unquote, progressing. So I think Mark Williams is in the same category as Chris Middleton with how much longer do we hear this keep progressing thing before we call it what it is? And like, they had a setback. Let's just say it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It does seem like progressing is the new setback. One other thing from Thursday night's games, Tom. Wolves-Raptors, the moment in the fourth quarter that kind of went viral on social media. Gobert was fighting for positioning inside, sealed his defender underneath the rim, and Julius Randle didn't pass him the ball. Gobert got called for a three-second violation. Anthony Edwards is screaming at Gobert, pissed off at him after the moment. Next time up on defense, Gobert hip checked Scotty Barnes because Barnes was kind of talking and Gobert seemed frustrated. It was 95-95 at that moment. And then Barnes hits those two free throws. Wolves go on to lose the game. There was a play where Randle did pass the ball to Gobert, but he passed it to his feet. There was a turnover on the play. Wolves are 8-7 on the season. We talked about them last Friday after they lost to the Heat without Butler. Two losses versus the Blazers. They lose to the Raptors, a team that they should beat, and they're 8-7, and this is their upcoming schedule. At Boston on Sunday, then they have a homestand, Houston, Kings, Clippers, Lakers. Then they have at Clippers, at Warriors twice, Knicks, Warriors, Hawks, and that's all leading up to the Mavericks on Christmas Day. That's their next 12 games at 8-7. With what we've seen through 15 games, I'm not seeing many signs that it's going to get better. And then you look at the schedule coming up and it's like, ooh, like this could get ugly really fast.
And here's the other thing. They've had almost a perfect bill of health this season. Yes. So like when you look across the league, how injuries are skyrocketing and stars are out, and great news for Scotty Barnes to be back in that game. It was great to see that. But a lot of stars have been out across the league. And the Minnesota Timberwolves, their three stars, when we're talking about Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, and Anthony Edwards, have played in every single game this season. That is the only team in the NBA that can say that their star players have played in every single game. So this is best case scenario from a health perspective for a team that's 8-7 and about to reach the gauntlet in their schedule.
Brian Windhorst over at ESPN had a report this morning. They were talking about the idea of expansion coming in a couple of years in regards to how the West has been so much better than the East this year, about how there's going to be a fight between like Minnesota, Memphis, and New Orleans as the team that gets to move East. And he had an interesting quote from a Western Conference GM where he said that the league should move to 1-16 playoff seeding. You would avoid this fight between these teams trying to move East. And the West GM said to Windy, it would be the right thing to do for the health of the league. It's not just about fairness. It's about giving the fans the best playoff product. Now, obviously, Western Conference teams are going to be saying that. It's advantageous to them if they're able to have conference-less playoffs rather than the current setup. However, do you agree with the West GM, though, that it would be for the best for the NBA as a whole to go to a conference-less schedule or a conference-less playoff seeding, considering everything with the fight toward team to move East, considering the fact that you would have more high-quality teams? Is he right?
Of course he is. Like, we've talked about it on this show. Yes. That's absolutely what the league should do. The problem is that this has to be put up to a vote, and you have to get, I think, 2/3. Correct me if I'm wrong.
In that post, Bond Temps had said 75%.
Three-fourths. Yes. Okay. So the wrong fraction there.
Yes. If there's 32 teams voting, so that would mean 24 teams. So 15 teams in the West, plus Vegas, plus Seattle, that'd be, let's just say, 17 yes votes. You would need 7 of the 15 current East teams to say yes. And I mean, like, is Philly going to say yes when they're 2-12, Paul George, knee hyperextension right now with the Joel Embiid stuff? Are the Bucks going to say yes? They're just getting Middleton cleared, as you mentioned, Tom. 6-9, tied for the 8 seed, but they'd be further back if they were at 1-16. Are these teams really going to say yes?
I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure about that. You can get 7-15.
Do we have a Western Conference or an Eastern Conference like whip in the political sense of just like rallying the votes to figure out a way to like pass this or to block this? Because I think that's what's going to end up happening is there's got to be a mole, an Eastern Conference mole who's going to work on behalf of the West, paid by some Western Conference executive to whip up the votes to get this 32 thing, the 32 1 through 16 vote. I don't know why an Eastern Conference GM or team or owner would ever vote for this, because it would likely make like 10, 12 Western Conference teams versus just 6 or 8 Eastern Conference teams. And that's the problem, is that this has to pass at a 75% vote. And I just can't imagine, unless there is some sort of like quid pro quo at the league level, I don't understand how this would ever pass, but it is the right thing for the league to do. And unfortunately, I just don't see it happening in the next 5 years, unless there's like some sort of commissioner vote where it's just like Adam Silver just puts his arm down and says, you know what, we're making this happen. I am sorry. Executive order, commissioner order right now.
That's what he should do. Stomp your foot down and make it happen. To me, like that's what Silver should do here. Like, make it happen. And maybe the compromise is, this isn't permanent. We'll do this for 3 years. See how it goes. And if it screws everything up and if fans don't like it, then we'll reverse it. But if fans love it, and if it makes the product better and that leads to more money in owners' pockets, well, hey, like maybe it could be good. And by the way, it's not like they would get rid of the play-in necessarily. You could even expand the play-in. You can make it 20 teams or something and have the play-in, and that creates more room for East teams to have an opportunity. So I think there's something there. We'll see if it actually ends up happening. We're like Wendy said, we could be 2 to 3 years away from actual expansion. I'm a little surprised we still haven't gotten actual clarity on when that's going to happen. I mean, we're almost in 2025 right now, Tom, and we don't have a set date on when Vegas and Seattle are going to be added to the NBA. I thought we'd know by now.
And they haven't announced that they are going to be added. So it's not just that they're going to be added, it's when they're going to be added. And I think it probably speaks to maybe the bids aren't where they want it to be, or some financial thing that they have to hash out. But also the whole like Tom Brady problem is, if LeBron James wants to be a part of ownership in Vegas, doesn't he kind of have to not be playing in the NBA? And that's another variable to this where it's like, all right, yeah, when is this going to be? Because LeBron's still, you know, playing at a very high level. And I don't know if that's tied to the report recently that like maybe he's going to retire after one more year. It's something to keep an eye on. My third eye is definitely opening on the whole expansion, when the Vegas team will be approved or implemented. It is very weird.
Could he be owner player?
He could. I just don't know how that works at the league level, how they would codify that in the I mean, it's just, there's so much that the players union would have to give up in order for that to come through. But then again, maybe it's in the league's best interest. It would be cool to have an owner / player, but it might be a big give back.
Yeah, I would think so as well. We also got a couple other news items. DeAnthony Melton did undergo season-ending ACL surgery for the Golden State Warriors on Friday night. Luka out with a right wrist strain in the matchup against the Nuggets. Jokic is also questionable for personal reasons. So we might get a matchup between Denver and Dallas without either of their stars. Kind of sucks, Tom. I was looking forward to that matchup. We know we're not going to have Luka. We may also not have Jokic.
The latest update I have here is that 44% increase in star injuries this season. 44% increase in games lost due to injury or absences this season. It's really high in the early going, having 15 stars out on a given night in the NBA. And that's astronomical compared to last year. Again, players lost or games lost due to injury or absence or suspension by star players, guys who have been an all-star in the last 3 years or all NBA in the last 3 years. Add Luka to the mix. It has not been a strong start from a health perspective. And certainly Joel Embiid and all that off-court stuff is not helping matters with the conversation around star players this year.
When we're back, we're going to talk about the 1 month NBA awards.
Let's do it.
All right, Tom, we're 1 month into the NBA season. Let's reveal our awards ballots. It's early. I know it's early, but it's a good time to set a baseline for the season that we've seen so far. Let's start with MVP. Here's my top five. Tell me where you disagree. Tell me where you agree. 5, Stephen Curry. 4, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 3, Anthony Davis. 2, Jason Tatum. And number 1, no surprise, Nikola Jokic. Having an absolutely unbelievable season despite some of his missed games this past week. 29.7 points per game, 13.7 boards, 11.7 assists, 1.7 steals, 1 block, shooting over 50% from 3. Absolutely unbelievable again. If the season ended today, he'd win his 4th MVP, I think, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. It's unanimous. At this point, at the 1 month poll mark, that is 100% Nikola Jokic's award. Also, in the NFL, there's like 17 games. We're at like the 17 game mark for a lot of these teams in the league. So like, think about that. It's like the NFL, this is the time where we've already had enough games that it's okay for the NFL to hand out awards. It's the same thing for NBA. We've got a lot of information to say that Jokic leading the league in assists, leading the league in rebounds, and leading the league in 3-point field goal percentage, which, by the way, to qualify for that, you have to have at least one three-pointer made per team game, and he's there. He's qualified for 3-point record or the leaderboard. I mean, have we ever seen anything like this, dude? It's incredible. If I'm looking at your top five, the one thing I'd probably have a little higher or lower is I have Stephen Curry, that Warriors team, where they're at this season, number 1 in the Western Conference. Considering he was out a couple games, he's still playing at an extremely high level, and everything they do has been because of that guy, number 30. Big reason why I think he's the best offensive player since Michael Jordan, which we covered in the big number last week. Go check that out. I think Stephen Curry is probably top 3, and Jason Tatum's a little lower. I think the Celtics as a whole, it's hard to distinguish yourself as an MVP candidate on that team because of the system and because of how many good players they have. But Jason Tatum is in the top 5. I probably just have Steph one slot above him.
I think it's fair to move Steph up. You know, it's interesting. I have not seen any of the response on social yet because, you know, I published it, then we went straight to this recording. I'm like, as always, anytime you do awards ballots, there's going to be disagreements. I thought Steph at 5 would be the one that people would disagree with a lot. So I look forward to seeing
too high, you're saying, or too low?
Too high. I think people would say it's too high. Oh, he's averaging only, 23 points per game. How's Luka not ahead of him? How's Edwards or Fox or whoever it is, or Giannis? The Bucks have a losing record. I can't put Giannis higher right now. So KD's missed game. So, but I think Steph at top 3 would be very fair in my eyes as well. I have him 5th right now. Speaking about all NBA, my second team, I have Ant, Fox, Luka, Mitchell, LeBron. Third team, I have Giannis, KD, Victor, Kyrie, and Franz. I put Franz on there for now as the 15th guy. And there's 20 guys that you could argue on the third team right now. Brunson, LaMelo, Devin Booker, Jaylen Brown, Şengün, Kat, Harden, Jalen Williams, Jared Allen, Draymond. There's a lot of guys that you could argue for that third team. So, but that's currently what I have. Any disagreements, like clear disagreements with those all NBA guys?
I would probably, just because he's only played 9 games, leave out KD. That's about half of the games for the Suns. They're 9-7 this year. So KD's been awesome. But if you're going to put him over some of those other guys, I just would point to playing time. And that's the tough thing about the NBA now, is you can't just be like, he's been awesome this year. You have to say, yeah, but he's been out for 7 games. And that's just the reality in the NBA. That's becoming, one of those things that in NBA awards, unfortunately, we have to consider how much they're actually playing out there. And for KD's candidacy, I would probably put Devin Booker over him purely because Devin Booker's actually been out there.
Totally fair. Let's move on to the defensive player of the month. And number three, I have Dyson Daniels, who you know we've talked about on this podcast, 6.9 deflections per game, 3.1 steals, one block. He's been a menace on defense. And number two, I have Draymond Green, who's anchored that Warriors defense once again. Same old thing from him. And at number one, I have Victor Wembanyama, averaging 3.7 blocks per game, 1.3 steals. And the big stat that I think really captures his impact this year, opponents are shooting 38.8% within 6 feet of the rim when defended by Victor Wembanyama. That is 23.1% worse than their normal percentages within 6 feet of the rim. 38.8%, Tom. That's wild.
He turns two-footers into 20-footers. That's what that says. That's what that stat says. Victor Wembanyama, just his proximity. Remember, this is not about how many block shots he has. This is capturing just him being nearby. The proximity of this 7'5" guy turns two footers into 20 footers. And that, my friends, is a defensive player of the year winner. Now you look at the roster for the Spurs. Would you ever think that with his supporting cast, they'd be eighth in the NBA in defensive rating? No way. That's how good he's been. And by the way, like, it's not just the block shots, it's the steals, it's the deterrence of going into the paint. The stat is, you know, 38% within the basket area, like you said, where the league average is around 55, 60%. But also, the guys are making business decisions. How many business decisions have guys made seeing Wemby out there and being like, yeah, I'm not going into the paint, I'm kicking out?
With the Daniels inclusion at number three, I had a hard time with that one because as incredible as he's been individually, he's been incredible. He's off ball. He's always in the passing lanes, on ball. He's been a stopper. He's applied ball pressure. He's been great individually. The Hawks defense still isn't good, whether he's on the floor or not. Like, they're still a bottom 10 defensive rating team. So I'm including him individually, but I had a hard time putting him over some of my first team defensive team guys like Evan Mobley, Jaren Jackson Jr. And then the second team, I had AD, Bam, Lou Dort, Suggs, Rudy Gobert. And again, same thing. You can mention Jonathan Isaac, Drew Holiday, Tari Eason, a ton of guys that belong in the conversation. OG Anunoby, Jason Tatum for one of those all defensive teams. But Daniels is a tough one because those interior guys are just so much more important overall, I'd argue, rather than the perimeter guys like Daniels.
Remind me, did you mention Chet in there? And how do you feel about what he's done this year
sample size? I did not mention Chet because he's going to miss so many games.
Yeah,
It's just unlikely. Maybe I should have put him on there considering it's just the first month awards. Maybe that was an oversight on my part, but
He's only played 10 of the team's 16 games, so it's hard to do. Yeah. It's just what he did in the first few weeks of the season was outrageous.
And it was unbelievable.
Trending to be the best defense in NBA history. Another big number that we did with Dan Devine, go check it out. That defense is still really good. I had the chance to broadcast the Blazers game the other night against OKC where Isaiah Hartenstein came back and was just awesome. But for much of that game, they were playing small ball with J-Dub at the five, and they're still just a bunch of Dobermans. They are so good defensively. Alex Caruso also should be, if you didn't mention him, he should be in that all-defense category because he's right up there with deflection, steals, the defensive rating while he's on the floor. Awesome. One quick note. You know who's second in deflections per game this season, KOC?
Fox.
I have it as the NBA.com/stats, the hustle stats category with most deflections per game. Nikola Jokic.
Oh, interesting. For per game.
Dude does everything. Wow, he does everything. I don't understand it. He's a cyborg. He does threes. He does the passing. He does the Z bounds around the rim, which I call the somboards. He does everything. The guy is a marvel. MVP 10 times over.
Yes, he is, clearly. And you're right, he probably does belong in that second team discussion. He just does. It's the reality of it. He's gotten so much better on defense. I think, and the one other name, I'm curious about your thoughts on this. I have Lou Dort second team. I tended to lean on the guys playing more minutes. Like, I chose Dort over Caruso, Suggs over Isaac. So I lean on the guys taking more minutes for their respective teams. But It's tough, man, because like those other guys, Caruso, Jonathan Isaac, they are all defensive team talents, and on a per minute basis that they deserve it. To me, I think it speaks to the challenge with some of these defensive awards and accolades. Defense is such a collective thing. You can be Dyson Daniels and you can be individually amazing, but it doesn't matter if your collective team is not. You just can't impact the game individually the same way an offensive player can.
Yeah, I saw an interesting conversation with Dyson Daniels and his Aussie mate, Lee Ellis, the other day. A great video on NBA.com where he broke down a lot of his defensive stats. And he mentioned a couple times, he said, but I got to be careful about over gambling because it really puts a compromised state for the defense. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I'm going to be watching a little bit more is whether Dyson Daniels is being instructed like this, like, hey, I know you're going for every steal and every deflection, but it is kind of when you don't get that steal, the gambling does hurt our cohesion defensively on the back line. It's something I'm going to watch going forward is because for every steal and incredible deflection he makes, you do have to keep in mind the ones that he misses, is that putting the defense at a disadvantage? And maybe that's part of the reason. I think he's a net way positive for them, but why they're not elite defensively with a guy who's like Scottie Pippen out there.
He's had two games in a row without a steal. He had none against the Kings, none against the Warriors. So I do wonder if maybe there's a slight shift in how the coaches are deploying him on defensive end of the floor. We'll be back in a moment and we'll talk about our rookie awards, most improved player, sixth man, coach of the year. First, I just want to remind the listeners, hit me up at the mailbag. We're going to bring that back on Tuesday. KOC show at yahoosports.com. We'll take any questions. Emails are great. Feel free to send video notes or audio notes as well. KOC show at yahoosports.com. All right, Tom, rookie of the month. Number three on my list, Bob Carrington from the Washington Wizards, leading all rookies in assists, turning the ball over 1.8 times per game. Been great shooting from three, getting to the mid-range. Been a lot of fun to watch him on the Wizards. Dalton Connect, number two, have him for the Lakers. I mean, dude, guy's just a bucket. He might very well win this award at the end of the day. But for now, number one, I have Jared McCain leading the way as the potential rookie of the year. Currently averaging on the year 15.6 points per game, 2.7 assists, 41% from three, averaging over 20 minutes. He averaged over 25 points per game in the games Maxey was out. Sustaining that with Maxey returned is going to be the key for him to stay as the front runner for Rookie of the Year. But for the Rookie of the Month, to me, it's Jared McCain without a doubt.
Thyree Irving is the Rookie of the Month for sure. Thyree Irving. Have we ever had a 50-40-100 season? Because that's what we're having with Thyree Irving. He is, right now, 100% shooting from the free throw line. And he's a dude, another point guard from Duke, which is why, with huge thighs, which is why I call him Thyree Irving. He is a guy that is, you know, not going to live at the free throw line. So he might actually pull this off this season where, you know, he is shooting 32 for 32, perfect at the line. And he's doing a little bit of everything offensively in his scoring column. He's setting up his teammates. I love what he's doing. However, the DC, Donovan Klingon, Kling Kong eraser from UKOC in the top three of the Rookie of the Month club. Get out of here with that. I am 100% biased because I'm covering him on a nightly basis. But DC has, I think, earned number three on that spot, and maybe you had him at number four, so who am I talking about here? But Donovan Klingon is in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation if he gets a little bit more minutes. And from the Rookie of the Year class, he's got a 12% block rate, meaning when he's on the floor, opponent twos are getting blocked 12% of the time by Donovan Klingon, which is the number one rate in the NBA. He's amazing at paint protection. Guys don't even want to go in there. He had 8 blocks earlier this year. So Donovan Klingon, when he's had some really good offensive performances recently, Kevin, where would you put him in your top, whatever, say top 10 in the Rookie of the Year for the month?
I mean, if we're factoring in since Ayton went out, he'd be two or three, right alongside McCain and Connect. But I think when you look at some of the lower minutes totals, I just, you know, I bumped him down to, you know, five or six, whatever I had him at. But like he, at this rate, like I wrote on YahooSports.com, I did say, I think Klingon and Castle are going to be the two guys that you see when we do this again later in the season that come on really, really strong to potentially be the rookie of the year winner, or at least like clear cut, no da, first team, all rookie guys. But for now, I think he's averaging, 16 minutes per game. I bumped him down a little bit, but he's been sensational, and hopefully he continues to play big minutes late and returning soon, because that's going to be frustrating if his minutes drop back down. Billups needs to use two bigs. Has to.
Yeah, and Klingon's showing that he wants to shoot the three, and same with DA. So DA has been averaging about a 3.5 per 36 minutes while out on the floor. He's going to stretch the floor a little bit more. And Rob Williams, he's demanding minutes too. He's been outstanding off the bench for the Blazers. So they have a real, you know, logjam at the center position. And my guy, I love Dwap Three. I call him Dwap Three because he's amazing stretch five. I want to tell you about this Donovan Klingon stat, because on Friday night, he has a chance to break the franchise record for most games with a block to start his career, passing none other than Bill Walton. And he's right now, I believe, sixth all time in this category of most games with a block to start your career at 15. The guy with 16, a little bit higher on the list than Donovan Klingon right now, is Michael Jordan, which is absurd. Absurd. What? I want to know. I want to make sure that all those blocks are legit for Michael Jordan leading his season. If you haven't read last year's
Yahoo Sports. Got another article coming?
Another
big research project coming, Tom?
Maybe I got to investigate these blocks that he had his rookie season. I kid. I'm sure they're 100% legit blocks by Michael Jordan to start his career. But another note on that, Alonzo Mourning started his career with 57 straight games with a block, which is probably never going to be broken. Wow. I mean, I can't imagine how that gets broken.
Say 57?
57 games in a row to start his career.
Huh. It's incredible. 57.
Hey, maybe DC can do it.
Maybe. Let's move on to most improved player of the month. At number three, I have Benedict Mathurin from the Indiana Pacers. Number two, Bilal Coulibaly with the Washington Wizards. One of the stats that shows his improvement. Last year, he shot 29% out of the pick and roll, 12 for 41 on the year. This year, shooting 58% out of the pick and roll, 14 for 24. So his volume is way up. He's going to exceed the amount of total possessions he had all of last season very, very soon. But he's also scoring more efficiently, pulling up from mid-range, getting to the basket. But number one, I have Christian Brown from the Denver Nuggets, averaging 16.2 points per game, shooting 60% from two, 42% from three, logging 5 rebounds per game, 2 stocks per game. Brown has filled the minutes left by Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and he has been a great defensive player. He has been a great shooter, a great cutter, handling the ball a tick more as well. I have Christian Brown number one, and I already know people are going to be saying, how do you not have Franz Wagner number one? Franz Wagner was already very, very good last year. I didn't put him number one yet, but he's definitely on the radar if he sustains this, because that could be a big leap to go from very, very good to, oh, wait a minute, this guy's an all-star.
To me, I have Franz, and that's not just about Thursday night and the inferno he had against the Lakers and winning that game. It's also just being the guy, and Christian Brown isn't the guy. He is, you know, third, maybe fourth option for the Denver Nuggets. And so for me, that leap of Franz Wagner taking that throne and saying like, no, I'm also the face of this team, not just Paolo Banchero, to me is harder. And in terms of improvement, he was good last year, but he wasn't great. And this year he is great. And I think that moving from like a top 100 player in the league, top 50 player in the league, going into top 20, top 15. That to me is a steeper curve. And I give him just a little bit more bonus points on that. But I can't really argue with your list.
Sixth man of the month. Number three, I got Buddy Hield from the Warriors. Two, Tari Eason from the Houston Rockets. And it's very close for me between Eason at two with Peyton Pritchard. I have him first with the Boston Celtics, Pritchard averaging 15 points per game, 42% on almost 9 three-point attempts per game, averaging nearly 3 assists per game. He's been everything the Celtics need from a backup point guard. He's had 28-point game against the Bucks. He's had an 8-assist game against the Nets. He can be a playmaker if you need him to be that. He can be a scorer if you need that. But between him and Tari Eason, I have them as my pretty clear top two right now. Tari Eason's been one of the best defensive players in basketball so far in the year. He's shooting nearly 40% from three as well for Houston. That Amen Thompson, Tari Eason combo off the Houston bench has been a lot of fun to watch. But that's currently my sixth man list, Tom. Who do you have as your leader in the sixth man race?
This guy has been a complete difference maker for his team. When he's on the floor, the team is plus 56. And when that player is off the floor, it's minus 162. That per 100 swing of plus 26 is second in the NBA. So when he's on the floor, they're really good. When he's not on the floor, they're really struggling. This player's averaging 25 points per 36 minutes. He's averaging 5.8 assists, 4.8 rebounds, and shooting 43% from three coming off the bench. That, my friends, is DB Hooper, Delano Banton for the Portland Trail Blazers. This guy is insane. He is, of course, not a national name, but what he has done for this Blazers team, giving them life off the bench and lifting that second unit, the numbers with he and Delano, and Donovan Clingan, outrageous. Delano Banton's one of the top fourth quarter scorers in the league. And in terms of what you want to see from a bench unit, a bench guy and leading a bench unit, I think right now you can't say that anyone's done a better job of lifting not just himself, but everyone around him more than Delano Banton. If you're not going to put him in the top three, I get it, but it's probably because his minutes. He wasn't doing this in the first half of the season. It's only been a month into the year, and he's coming on like crazy. So keep an eye on this, dude. Delano Banton that the Celtics had last year and then traded him at the deadline to kind of some financial flexibility. He's been one of the biggest sleepers in the league this year and a big reason why I love broadcasting this team, because that guy, Delano Banton, he's box office every time he steps onto the floor.
I have Banton on my on-the-radar list of six men because you're right, Tom. He's not a big name. He's on the Blazers. He's playing 10:30 p.m. Eastern games. A lot of people are not watching him or even know who he is. But he's been a pretty good player for Toronto and Boston as a deep bench guy. And now with Portland, it's the most consistent opportunity he's received. And you're seeing why he's had appeal to some really good organizations, Toronto and Boston. He's 6'9", 6'10", tall, skilled with the ball, versatile. Banton definitely belongs on. I don't think he's number one yet for the reasons you mentioned with the minutes. But he deserves mention because of how good he's been.
He's averaging 25, 5, and 5 per 36. And I know if he gets more playing time, maybe those numbers come down a little bit. But we're talking about the highest scoring average per 36 for any bench player in the last decade plus. So this guy is just filling it up. And he's 6'9", ball handler who gets to the rack at will. The other night against Rudy Gobert, just towered over him and was demanding like, yeah, I'm going to get this bucket over you. And the guy is fearless. And I think he's a big reason why the Blazers are overachieving right now, considering the injuries to DeAndre Ayton and Anfernee Simons and the tough start for both of those guys. The fact that they've won these games against Minnesota is a lot to do with this dude, Delano Banton.
If you want to read my awards, you can see that on yahoosports.com. Last up, Tom, we have the coach of the month. Number three, I have Steve Kerr with the Warriors playing a 12-man rotation. Get the Warriors at a plus 10 net rating, 11-3, best in the West. Might be the winner at the end of the day, but for now I have Ty Lue, number two, getting the Clippers to 9-7 without Kawhi Leonard. One of the best defenses in basketball so far, but number one, very clearly has to be Kenny Atkinson, 16-1. Cavs started the year 15-0. New head coach there. The team looks great. They're Garland and Mitchell are working together better than ever. Mobley and Allen are as well. He's making it all click better than it ever has over this ever. Kenny's the clear coach of the month so far, right?
Of course. Not only are they 16-1, but against the spread, they're 13-4. I like that for Coach of the Year, is like exceeding expectations on a nightly basis. And Vegas is usually pretty good figuring out how good your team is. And Kenny Atkins' squad there in Cleveland is doing better than expectations on a nightly basis, 13-4 against the spread. And also, Jamal Mosley deserves a shout out from Orlando, is just the way that they've kind of reoriented their offense. They're getting a lot more threes up, and Paolo Banchero's been out, and they're still one of the top teams in the East. It's a low bar to clear, but I think Jamal Mosley also deserves some pub here, and I can't really disagree with your list either.
Yes, yeah, Mosley, I have him on my on the radar coaches. There's, I think Mazzulla was on that as well, Dagnall, Budenholzer, Udoka, a lot of candidates so far early on in the season. But that's all we got, Tom. That's our 1 month awards. Got any good plans this weekend? Anything going on?
I got two Blazers games at Houston, okay. One of these baseball series back-to-backs against Houston. I'm excited to see our boy Reed Sheppard and how he's going to do, getting a little bit more run. But man, this is one of those back-to-backs Friday and Saturday night that my family just really appreciates, you know.
So you stay home, we'll go out with the kids, go to the movies or something like that, right?
Sunday fun day it is. Yes.
Okay, that's good. Tom, I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm going to be listening to the new Father John Misty album, so we'll let that play us out. Tom, you can find his work at The Finder. You can find him on Yahoo Sports. Tom, you're doing everything. You do a whole bunch. What did you write about this week? You did a Michael Jordan. I'm sorry, LeBron James. I'm mixing up goats. LeBron James finding his new 3-point shot in a big number, right?
We did the big number on LeBron James and his elite 3-point shooting, which is, by the way, 43% now after those huge threes last night in the fourth quarter. The way he's just firing it from 30-plus is insane. Also this week, something that you, Kevin, have written about, the Anthony Edwards taking so many threes and whether that's a good thing. I talked to some people in the league. We looked at some data and the shot desert problem in the league of whether it's a thing that the NBA needs to look at is the mid-range game is being completely abandoned on a regular basis. There are games, Kevin, where a team does not score at all from the mid-range for an entire NBA game. A decade ago, we never saw it, and now we see it every night in the league. There are 24 already this season, shot desert games, 0 points scored in the mid-range. And we look at Nick Wright's suggestion of, should we make dunks worth 3 points to get Ja Morant, Anthony Edwards dunking more rather than settling for threes? I would love maybe next week we can talk more about it, because I don't think this trend is going anywhere anytime soon.
Definitely not going away anytime soon. Go check out Tom's work at Yahoo Sports in The Finder, and check out The Big Number as well. Thanks to Tom for joining me on this Friday. Thanks to John for producing. And thanks to you for giving us a listen. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. It really does help out the show. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.